Thank you very much, Mr. Director and Secretariat, for assembling this. In the interest of time, I'm going to go through my presentation a little bit quicker. You're going to get a crash course on high integrity policy making. It's hard to imagine an unstable process such as this leading to a good policy outcome. And high integrity policy making is basically all about the process and WIPO's role in that process for ensuring that we can get to policies that will in fact work. We have what we call the Trinity, that we all agree on the nature of the problem. Many of us don't agree on the dimensions of the cause of the problem, and we have less agreement even around the solutions to the problem. I'm going to skip through some of the background material here. What is high integrity policymaking? Basically, it's a series of procedures, methodologies. It's trying to bring a more scientific approach to the production of policy to increase the likelihood of policy success. One of the key elements is something we call MAP. And MAP is basically metrics, analytics, and processes that are designed to help ensure that the input into the policymakers, the foundation information that is what the policymakers depend on, make sure that that information is in fact accurate and complete. We have a concept in high integrity policymaking called inheritance and instantiation. The concept here is that the role of the global policy community is to create a series of frameworks that can create a concepts that we are, or goals that we're trying to achieve, and that in policy itself should be limited to specific instances of application of those frameworks, so that basically these instances inherit the properties of global policy. So the challenge in complex arenas such as climate change is that it's very difficult to create a one-size-fits-all policy that will address the needs of individual nations and regions in a way that will work successfully. So we live in a very complicated world. We have very high stakes. Climate change is a high-stake problem. We can't really wait for 10 years to find out that our policy approaches are not successful. And we have multiple and competing objectives. There are industrial objectives, there are climate change objectives, there are other interceding goals that come into the debate. And so how do you deal with all of those competing objectives? And the goal of high integrity policymaking is to try to figure out how to best balance all of those competing objectives to achieve a fair result that works. One of the features of the climate change debate in particular is that we have a fairly low data integrity, unreliable data sources. It's hard to get good data. The data with respect to the role of, for instance, intellectual property rights and the interplay of intellectual property rights and technology diffusion and uptake. There's not much research that has conclusively determined what the role of IP is in this discussion. We have a situation where we're making policy without adequate foundation information with respect to one of the major inputs into the policymaking process, and that is the role of intellectual property. And one of the objectives or one of the roles that WIPO can play is to help implement the research and policy processes that would help provide more accurate input to policymakers. There are three features of the policy debate that are important here, and that is that the world is is irascible, which means that stakeholders in this debate tend to resist change. We know that reality, when you poke it with a stick, tends to bite back. So making policy that will actually be adopted by stakeholders and not resisted by the stakeholders is critical. So stakeholder involvement is an important feature of this process. There's also mutability. Policy Mutability basically deals with the concept that policy can be influenced by very small factors. In physics, we have two theories. We call one catastrophe theory, one chaos theory. If we think about the weather system is somewhat chaotic. It appears to be random, but it tends to aggregate towards a central, what we call a common attractor. What that means is that while the weather may change tomorrow, it's not going to be 200 degrees. It varies around a range of temperatures. But policy, on the other hand, insignificant or relatively small changes in policy can have catastrophic effects on decision-making that goes into how the economic system responds to those policy changes. So unlike the weather, which tends to aggregate around a central temperature, policy makers or decision makers in an economic system may choose, for instance, to de-invest in climate change technologies. So we don't know what the impact of creating interference with the IP system might have. Let me just take a second here. You all get college credits for this. When we look at this chart here, looks at social interest. As social interest in a policy issue increases, and on the x-axis we see different phases of the policymaking process. The first phase we call the mythology epoch, then there's the evidentiary epoch, and then the policy epoch. What happens is that there are a series of narratives around an issue, and those narratives tend to aggregate into certain mythologies. Those mythologies are promoted by various interests. In the normal policymaking process, that goes into some evidentiary process where scientists, economists, other kinds of researchers may begin to explore the issue, and out of that comes policy. Unfortunately, what happens is as social interest increases, we still have our narratives, we still have our mythologies, but we kind of skip over the facts and we go straight to policy. Climate change is a debate that's very much characterized by this phenomenon, because it's a very high social interest, very high stakes problem. In the scientific community, we see a similar thing. There are scientific narratives and scientific myths, and over time, research gets done, and a scientific consensus begins to evolve, and out of that consensus, information should feed into policy. But likewise, it's possible to skip over this evidentiary phase and just use scientific information to support our particular mythologies and try to feed incorrect information into the policy process. So this is a little bit technical, I appreciate that. But when we think about high integrity policymaking and the role of the WIPO, one of its functions would be to cool down the level of social interest and the influence of mythology on the debate, and to make sure that the evidence is what actually is fed into the policymaking process. So how does that interplay with IP directly? Well, IP is more than the social compact between exclusivity and disclosure. Oftentimes the debate is framed around that concept, but IP is actually a fairly complex system, and it provides the foundation for many important relationships which are easy to disrupt. And some of those relationships are business relationships that have to do with how business makes decisions around risk and return on investments and how they deploy their capital to discover new technologies, but also make the very substantial investments that are required in infrastructure, supply chains, training, all of the other things that go around intellectual property. And if you look at intellectual property, we have something we call the innovation lifecycle. And we start out with what is the problem we're trying to solve? And it goes through a process of discovery and making investment decisions and then putting in developing products, implementing support infrastructure, all the way around. Eventually, technology becomes obsolete and the cycle starts again. At each point, in each one of these boxes, there is a calculation that's made about the deployment of capital, an assessment of risk, and an assessment of the return on investment that's going to go with that risk. You cut the chain at any point, if the ROI doesn't make sense, if the risk seems too high, the entire innovation life cycle collapses. IP plays an important role in every one of these. We don't have a time for the five-credit lecture, That would be a lot longer. But basically, if we look at IP, it represents, in green technology, maybe 20% of the total intellectual property in this innovation lifecycle. The other 80% of the intellectual property is know-how, secret process, other things that are not quantified in the forms of patents. But patents provide a key pinning feature of know-how and infrastructure funding decisions and the whole innovation lifecycle. So when we talk about making new IP policy, it's important to have a very robust set of information and facts to understand what the impacts of this new policy may be on IP rights themselves, simply because of that disruption and the uncertainties of how that disruption might impact the innovation lifecycle have not been adequately quantified yet. One of the challenges in the multilateral process, in plurilateral negotiations, is that we drive towards consensus. The idea here is that the product needs to be policy, not consensus. Just getting agreement is not a sufficient result. As I said before, we really don't have 10 years to find out that our policy interventions have been ineffective. We really have a very limited window in time. What I'm showing, I don't know if you can all read that, it just says, we're almost free, everyone. I just felt the first drop of rain. And the issue here is simply that we can easily seem like we're making progress. These are a couple of folks who are probably escaping from some long bilateral negotiation. And they're taking the evidence of the rain as being an indication of success. What they don't know is where the rain is coming from. And clearly here we can have a catastrophic consequence. One of the projects that our organization, the National Peace Foundation, and because of the time constraint, I didn't tell you what the National Peace Foundation is all about. But we look at policymaking to look at promoting processes that help ensure that we have policies that work. We promote the development of institutions of civil society as a mechanism of reducing conflict. Climate change, as was mentioned earlier, is a significant contributor to potential conflict, maybe the most significant contributor to potential conflict in the 20 to 50 year time horizon. So we think it's really important to get the policies right. And so right now we're developing three white papers, and Dan Johnson is going to speak to you this afternoon at 4:30 in the panel on the role of patents in green technology transfer. Dan and his associates have been the principal authors of these three white papers. And the first white paper is looking at the role of innovation, the constraints on environmental innovation. The second one looks at the constraints on technology dissemination, and the third looks at the constraints on financing environmental innovation. To wrap this up, WIPO, I think, can play an important role in implementing procedures of the sort that we've briefly talked about here, high integrity policy making. To help the international policy community have a higher degree of assurance and less uncertainty about what the ultimate effects of policy may be. These white papers are examples of some very good, these are literature reviews basically, of some very good economic studies that really have not had an opportunity to be considered as part of the policy debate here, but need to be. A high integrity policy making process would help identify, as we have in these three cases, information that ought to be part of the policy making process. So one of the great contributions that the WIPO can make is not to the policy itself, but to the processes and the procedures and the methods that are being used by the international policy community to arriving at these policies. So thank you very much.